RNIB Connect Radio, celebrating 20 years of broadcasting around the UK.
You're listening to Roundtable Talks on RNIB Connect Radio, where blind and partially sighted people from different walks of life come together to discuss a big topic. And today we'll be talking all about representations of blind and partially sighted people in the media. So blind and partially sighted characters can have a powerful influence on their audience. They can share important stories and experiences from our community with new people. They can make blind and partially sighted audiences feel understood and empowered. They can break stereotypes and inspire nuanced discussions around life with sight loss. But if done badly, they can have the opposite effect. They can misrepresent the community and potentially reinforce harmful stereotypes and be very frustrating for viewers. And today we'll be discussing the good, the bad and the ugly of media representations of blind and partially sighted people with our panellist of creators, actors and media lovers. I'm Amelia Hilton, today's moderator, and it's time for us to introduce our panellists. So our first panellist is Alan Russell, who's been a content producer with RNIB Connect Radio for the past 18 years, so is a very well-known voice to our listeners. He lost his sight in 2000 and has been a guide dog owner since 2001, and he currently presents The Daily Connect with his guide dog Quigley, who's now 8 years old. Alongside his work at the radio station, Alan has done freelance work for the BBC, Scottish Television and Radio Scotland, and loves watching movies and TV in his spare time, especially Coronation Street. Welcome, Alan.
Now I want to hide because you said that I love Coronation Street. Thank you so much for that.
No worries, Alan. We'll move on to our next panellist, Ellie Walwork, and she is a visually impaired LGBT actor based in Brighton. She's best known for her roles in Doctor Who and Call the Midwife, and she's currently working on an LGBTQ+ short film called Picturesque. In her work and her personal life, she is passionate about authentic and intersectional disability representation on screen. So we're very excited to have her here for today's discussion.
Hiya, thank you for having me.
And last, but by no means least, we have Samuel Brewer, a blind actor and theatre maker, and a co-artistic director of the multi-award-winning theatre company Floorboard, whose work explores complex issues around identity using humour and meta-theatre. He is based in London, but is currently joining us from the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, so we're very grateful to have him here with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us, everyone. I am going to pose first question to Ellie. So is there a blind or partially sighted character that has stuck with you for good or bad?
I'm going to bring it up. Daredevil, in a bad way. I used to get told in school, like, do you have superpowers? Because you should, because that's what blind people have. And I think it really, like, affected how I viewed my own disability. Especially when I was young, I thought there was something wrong with me, that I, you know, wasn't some kind of superhero, some kind of, like, inspiration to absolutely everybody. I remember at the time a lot of people would sort of say that the only characters they knew from film and TV were the inspirations. And I just thought, well, I'm not that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with this. I think the Daredevil trope is, like, absolutely horrendous. But then you also got stuff like, there was the recent, like, Star Wars Rogue One that came out, and they had, like, the blind ninja guy. It's like any blind guy with a superpower. Scent of a Woman as well. That really grinds me up the wrong way. And then there's that other one. It's The Color Purple. That's it. Like, touching face, and, like, no one people feel like. But I always just find that that's become such a trope that people have literally asked me if I've wanted to feel their face. And I'm just sort of like, I've just met you. I don't want to touch your face.
I find it horrifically invasive. I don't want to touch people's faces. I don't know. It just feels weird to me. I know that I've got germs on my hands. Like, it doesn't mean anything to me. Like, I don't have any sight anymore. So I get absolutely no understanding of what someone looks like. I don't know why people would want me to just feel two eyes, a nose and a mouth. Like, what's that got to do with anything? I don't know. It's just weird.
No, exactly. I think that sort of stuff is just sort of like these assumptions. Again, that's, I think it just like runs off that whole trope of people, you know, in this world, we're like treating everything as binary, which we've just all worked out now isn't the way to go about anything. And I think that's the issue with any kind of media representation of blind people, for the most part. It's the binary attitude of blind people, like, this, you are blind, this is nothing. Whereas some people, you know, might see shadows, they might see this, they might have this vision, and then no one allows for that kind of nuance in any kind of impairment.
I would say, yeah, I kind of agree with the Daredevil thing, but, you know, it's a bit of Hollywood sensationalism, isn't it, really? Star Trek, there was a guy in Star Trek Strange New Worlds, it's Bruce Horak, who is blind and played his character as blind in the series. And I kind of liked his character because he kind of helped dispel some of the myths around sight loss in a sarcastic way. You know, people did the whole super hearing or super touch, super powers thing, and he really just kind of hit back with these sort of little quips, and I kind of thought, you know, that's really good, the way he's doing that. So I quite like that as a kind of positive one. I mean, there are some horrendous ones. I can think back to some of the early, like, Neighbours episodes where one of the characters lost his sight and he's walking around with Frankenstein with the arms outstretched trying to find his way around. Scent of a Woman, Al Pacino. I don't know, it's a bit annoying in a way, but I kind of like the character in it as well. But I suppose you have to try and separate the character from the perception it's giving off. Mm. So for me, it's a kind of, it's a bit of a mixed bag. I think it is getting a little bit better, but really painfully slowly.
It is slow, isn't it? I feel like every win I get when I look at a new script, especially in film, I look at a new script and there's always something that bothers me about it, just because I know that the person that's written it is not VI. And if they are VI, it's usually better. I don't, apart from one time, I've not really acted in anything written by a visually impaired person, apart from I co-wrote the last short film that I was in. But apart from that, and another radio play I was in, I've not really had that. And I think it's such a shame, because I feel like at all levels of creativity, you need disabled people, like whether that's writing or producing or acting or anything like that, because it makes it so much better.
It's kind of difficult, isn't it, to come up with lots of positives over the negatives, I think, because there have been so few good examples of how sight loss is portrayed, whether it's a, you know, cinema, theatre, or on TV as well.
Alan, can I ask, because I love Star Trek, and I know the character you're talking about. There's also Geordi LaForge from, like, the Next Generation as well.
Yeah.
It's Beyond, isn't it? That's the new one.
He is blind, and when it was, you know, he was picked for the role, and they really went out their way to understand his sight loss and what he could see, what he couldn't see. You know, they really apparently looked after him on set as well.
Yeah, that was really good, and I that's so positive. That's one of the big positive things, that, like, you get people looking after others on set, and it's a step in the right direction, 100%.
That's all part of it, isn't it? Making his experience good as well. The only real thing they really had to do was they had to use CGI on his eyes, because he plays an alien. They were going to try these bonkers contact lenses on him, and his eye specialist went, no.
Yeah.
Destroy the remaining tiny bit of vision you've got left if you use these. So at least, you know, from production to everything right through, they kind of made sure he was front and centre. They learned from him. What can we do for you? How can we do it? How do we make this look authentic?
And asking questions. That's the main thing. I've had some very good experiences on set and some very bad experiences on set. And the bad ones are always because I don't get asked questions. There's just an assumption of, I'm going to take you here and not give you any independence whatsoever. And that is so frustrating, because I want to be able to do things myself as much as I possibly can. I want people to ask me questions, to ask how they can help me. That's brilliant. I'm so glad that he had that experience.
Well, you both kind of do stuff in front of the camera or on stage and so on, but do you feel, why are they asking me all these questions? They should know this. But the flip side, if you like, do you think it's you guys' responsibility to kind of teach the people who are in charge to do it properly then?
I don't think it's necessarily our responsibility, except when it comes to our safety and things like that. I think it gets very exhausting to keep answering the same questions all the time, although I think it's quite a nuanced question, to be honest, because I do understand that people need to know and that people want to ask us. Sometimes I just wish people would ask someone else, even though I know that that's not really realistic because I'm the only one there at that point. I would love it if more production companies sought the opinions of disabled actors and disabled people who had been there, because not everybody is the same. I wish people would do it proactively rather than retroactively.
Yeah, proactive for sure, absolutely. I think it's also one of those things where if you want to pay me to be an access consultant, pay me to be an access consultant. I do a lot of access consultant work and I'm happy to do it, but if you've hired me as an actor or a performer or a maker or whatever, and then halfway through it, you're like, oh, Sam, can you actually do this thing? Because we're trying to do this or this audio description stuff here. I'll be like, absolutely not. And that's just sort of a rule I've had to put for myself now. I was doing a show last year. I knew the set, so I knew where stuff was. I was able to move around it, because that's the thing. You do it by memory. You've done it so many times. You've got the spatial awareness of the space. I was playing an old blind man because of my range, my incredible range. Well, the assistant director basically just went, oh, I'm not believing that your character's blind enough. The rest of the cast were just like, oh.
Not blind enough. So does that mean they want you to walk around like Frankenstein?
That is terrible. No, that's so insulting. I'm sorry, but like, what does being blind enough mean? You can't just level your disability like that. That's not how it works.
You're blind, but you're only acting 20% blind. Could you wrap that up a little bit?
Yeah. You're only level one blind. You need to level up to become more blind.
Super blind.
It's just so depressing that that's still happening.
Yeah, and like to this person's credit, they came up and apologized because I think they realized as they said it. But I was sort of like, you know, the people politically and academically, we're all like, we all think we're quite wonderful and really good and open-minded about stuff. But then in practice, we're not, because you've got no experience of like meeting someone or dealing with this person. It's when it becomes like a reality in front of you that people sort of tense and freeze up. Anytime I've done a job and I'm the other actors who are normally non-disabled, that this is the first time they've worked with a VI or blind actor, they don't treat me like one of the other actors, where usually the conversation is kind of like, oh, darling, where have you worked? Oh, this place, fantastic. Whereas me, it'll just be like sort of keeping me out of the circle until I prove myself. It's been affirmed by friends of mine who I've worked with who've been in the same room, where they've been like, you've suggested that, then someone else has suggested the same thing, and then they've gone with it. I think that's just always like really difficult.
I've only ever experienced that with supporting actor work, so extra work. I guess I didn't necessarily feel like I was one of the group. I just sort of felt separate. And that was really rough, because it was people who were just like me, but they were non-disabled. And luckily I had, you know, at that particular production, I had a group of disabled friends and other people who joined us, sort of just like all hanging around. But the rest of them, I just felt a bit awkward, because I was like, they're all talking. And then I walk into a room and everyone gets awkward. Yeah, it's weird.
What kind of roles or issues would you like blind and partially sighted characters to explore on screen?
Obviously, the trope of like blind or VI characters usually is sort of soothsayers, oracles, the piano player who like gives the main character some like kind of motivation to do something. I know Alan said that he liked Scent of a Woman. I did too. I really enjoyed it as a film, but I think for me, it sort of irritated me in the film. He wants to kill himself because he's lost his eyesight. But then I remember watching that and being like, oh, should I feel this bad about myself? Is that what I... And I get the context of it, I get it's a film, but I think in terms of like stuff to explore, it's just sort of like, A, having disabled characters who are allowed to be complex individuals. They don't have to be on like the moral good side. And I think that's sort of a trope that I see a lot of. I'd also like to see blind queer characters on stage.
So with the blind queer thing, I don't see it on screen ever. And it really annoys me, because I'm queer and I want to see people like me. And when I was coming out, I got told, well, you're too many things. You know, you can't like women and be blind. It was really patronising, actually, because like I'm a complex human being like everyone else is. And I want to see intersectionality at all levels in media, because it helps everyone and it helps people like me feel included. And I'd love to play more blind queer characters, and I'd love to see more blind queer characters and just diverse characters in general, because it's so good, and it makes me feel so empowered and so good about myself when I do.
God forbid then it was a blind queer character who was a single parent as well. I mean,
oh my gosh.
Do you think that when it comes to sight loss, like when we're broadcasting things, you know, when we talk about disability rights or employment, things like that, sight loss comes way down the list. And to me, as a broadcaster on radio and as someone who watches a lot of TV and films, like sight loss seems to come down the list as well. And there's lots of deaf characters or characters in wheelchairs.
I'm so glad they're there, but I know what you mean, yeah.
Yep, more of it, please. And, you know, and it should be the norm. But I'd like to see more blind characters in, you know, things like soap operas, or, you know, things that are really watched on a very regular basis, as opposed to the token blind person with a guide dog that wanders past a scene or is just a, sort of in the background.
Yeah.
And I kind of think, well, you know, you're really going out your way for characters with sort of mental health issues or physical disabilities. But what about sight loss? That still, to me, seems to be down the list.
There's the concept of either being too disabled or not disabled enough. And also, I think in a lot of the time, in like the world we live in, it's the perception of blind people existing is sort of like, you can't work, like you're never going to work. It's sort of like audiences, when they're watching something, they want to see a disabled looking person, but not somebody who's too disabled. Do you know what I mean?
This is the thing, like with partially sighted people, and I know that a lot of my partially sighted friends have this, where, and this is all in quotation marks, they don't look blind enough. And so in sort of real life, I suppose, they are going about their lives and they're not being given the help that they need. And I genuinely think that it's partly influenced by the fact that a blind person on TV is someone with a cane or someone with a guide dog. And like, there's definitely room for that. But I think also there needs to be nuance. There needs to be an understanding that being VI is a spectrum. And I think it's important to get that recognition, because being visibly disabled is very important, and representation of that is very important. But also, if you don't, quote, look disabled, quote, you're still disabled. It doesn't minimise your experiences. More people, especially audience members, need to learn that. And the best way to learn that is through media.
Like ourselves, you know, me, you know, if I'm in the office, I don't use my dog or a cane. I go about the office, I go down corridors, I go in at the studios. When I talk to people, I look at them and I face them. They always said, you don't act blind. How do you act blind? I don't know. I just, are you back to that old walking about with a cane and clattering into things and just fumbling absolutely everything? But yeah, that's a good point about, you know, why couldn't a character, when they're in their, maybe their home environment in a play or on the screen, they don't use the cane or the dog.
So I was doing a scene in a house, like in my house, and they were like, would you use your cane? And I just was like, what do you mean? No. And I kind of had to take a step back and be like, wait, genuinely, they don't know this, because a lot of the time, VI people are depicted as using their cane all the time if they have a cane. Or if they don't have a cane and they're completely blind, you know, walking around with their arms out, smashing into things. It's unrepresentative. And I think if you're going to represent disability, you need to represent all forms of disability and all intersections of it. Otherwise, it's not really like true representation.
I use my blind cane sometimes in public, sometimes I don't need to. It very much depends on the day, the lighting, but I always, and I know because there's no representation of this, I always feel like a fraud pulling out my blind cane in the middle of public. Do you know, people are like, did he just steal that from a blind person? It's always the kind of...
You're sitting somewhere or standing somewhere with your smartphone or your tablet and you're firing through things and they're like, how can you use that if you can't see the screen?
Or your phone's off. No, it's not. Yes, it is. The screen's black. No, it's literally not off. I can hear it. Just so much of a lack of education. I would love to just be in a film or in a TV series where I use my phone in the way that I would normally use my phone.
Can I ask, as we talked about bad representation of blindness, like for both of you, obviously we've got Star Trek there, but like, are there any other like good representations of blind people you've seen in media or on TV or anything like that at all that come to your mind? Because I really struggle.
I'm the same. I know of a really good Canadian blind actress who's making a lot of, like, doing a lot of cool things with representation over there. But I really want to watch it because I love supporting other actors. So I guess the main thing for me is I need to start watching things I know are, or I hope are, going to be good. Because so often, I'll be honest, it's terrible, but if I see that a blind person is being represented in media, I'll just get this horrible sinking feeling and be like, well, what if it's bad? And if I know it's good, and if I've heard it's good from other people, or if I know the actor, I'm much more likely to watch it. I think it's extremely sad. I don't think that's how I should be approaching things. But I think I've just been so, I guess, beaten down, and I want to change my attitude about that.
Similarly, I kind of struggle, I think, to find a positive character, or I'm really struggling to find other blind actors who play characters that I can associate with.
We should be able to answer this question with, you know, loads and loads and loads of different examples. And the fact that we're all struggling kind of just shows you that I don't think we're at a place yet where representation is good enough, because it's few and far between. Obviously, the stuff that I did, like, I'm not diminishing that. Other than that, I'm struggling to think of like a big, I guess obviously there's Star Trek, but we've already mentioned the ones that I can think of off the top of my head. All of the others have either been, you know, actors who aren't VI, or they've not been mainstream or big enough that I've come across them.
How do you three feel about sighted people playing blind and partially sighted characters?
Oh no, I knew this would come up.
I'll throw the first grenade. I think if it's a character who's blind or partially sighted, then yes, ultimately I think you should seek out an actor who's blind or partially sighted. I think the difficulty, though, for people looking for actors with those kind of skills is, are you going to get someone who is good enough? They may be blind or partially sighted, but do they have the acting skills that they're looking for that particular programme, film, production or whatever? So,
and are the people looking in the right places as
well? Yeah, well, absolutely. Do they know where to look to find people? And are they listed with bigger agencies? Do you then prioritise the sight loss over the acting ability because you need to tick a box? Or do you go for the acting ability and take the hit and say, well, you didn't get a blind person to play it, and say, well, do you know what? We couldn't find any that were good enough. I suppose you can go back to, well, you have to start training people to be that good, don't you? And have the opportunities there. So, you know, you could kind of tie yourself up in knots.
So me and one of my best friends, we're both actors. We get put up for the same roles all the time. Both of us got asked to do an audition for a production I won't name. And we both did what I personally think were really good auditions. And I know a bunch of other VI actresses auditioned for this, and they cast a sighted actor and they said that they just couldn't find anyone good enough. I felt absolutely gutted. It's one of the worst, I think, rejections I've ever had. All of the other rejections were fine because they were like, you know, you weren't good enough for this reason. It wasn't you weren't good enough, oh, we went for a sighted actor instead. It made me feel absolutely horrendous about myself because it was kind of them saying, well, we just didn't want to try hard enough. And I have absolutely no ill will towards that person because she must have been good to get the job. But I just thought, well, there are so many of us. Surely one of us was good enough. I don't really vibe with the whole, well, we couldn't find anybody because we're out there. You just need to look hard enough to find us.
This is my thing with any kind of underrepresented group in any industry. It's about jobs. Who's getting access to these jobs? But I think people constantly talk about, like, oh, an actor's job is to act and all this sort of stuff. And I'm just sort of like, yeah, but performing a disability, like me playing vision impaired, isn't me just taking on an impairment. What that also is doing is taking on the tension that I feel in my personal body because I'm so worried I'm going to walk into something and I carry myself with the tension constantly.
Oh my gosh, yes.
It's taking on the whole concept. Like, people just think it's just this sensation thing. It's like, no, you've spent your whole life constantly thinking you're going to bang into stuff. The way you walk will be slightly different. The way you move will be slightly, like the way you interact with people will be slightly different. And I think that kind of stuff isn't nuanced enough. And I think the issue I have with non-disabled actors playing disabled roles is the fact that disabled actors, for the most part, aren't getting in the room. And there's a lot of drama schools that are now, thank God, tanking in, like, disabled students. But it's also one of those things where I really believe if you get somebody who's got, like, a little bit of talent, you can give them an acting coach for a job. And they can work with somebody, you know what I mean? I'm not dismissing the craft. I'd be very clear here. I think it's a hard job and da-da-da. But this idea of we couldn't find anybody good enough, it's insulting. It's also...
Yeah.
I don't know how that would fly now. I'd like to think that wouldn't happen now.
I don't know. I hope it wouldn't. They just sort of were like, well, we tried. And I kind of just thought, that's not good enough. And my attitude is still, that's not good enough. If you're not willing to try and look for us, and like you said, give an acting coach. Like, also, I think it's important we get cast because we need the jobs anyway. Like, jobs are difficult to find as it is. And I think if you're just going to pass us over for a sighted person, why did you even bother auditioning us in the first place?
Are you then going back to, is it the agencies and the drama schools' fault for not being as inclusive in the first place? A lot of people will hone their craft in the drama skills, but if they aren't set up to bring in people who are blind or partially sighted and support them through their training, you know, they're going to get through that. Are they going to get seen by the agencies as well who are going to take them on? Or are they going to think, oh, well, there's not many blind roles that come up. You might want to go to a specialist agency or something like that. So to me, it kind of goes further back to the agencies and the drama schools and so on as well.
I tend to agree in that sense, but what I find interesting is, like, for me, I just don't think anything exists in a vacuum, right? Like, referring to Star Trek here, for example, like, Star Trek had the first interracial kiss in television history, and people were like, oh my God, this is incredible, it's amazing. It's like, yeah, absolutely, that's great. But the only reason that's happening is because of all this harder work that was going on by activists who were outside of this industry in a larger scale to make that happen. Again, it's one of those things where, does culture trickle down into politics, or does politics trickle down into culture?
I think it all goes down in a loop.
Yeah, it's just an endless loop.
One influences the other. I mean, I now feel way more comfortable as a queer actor because of all of the work that queer activists have done. As a society, the intersectionality, understanding that we could be multiple things, wasn't as there as it is today. And I'm very grateful for that. And I think I'll always be grateful for the activists that came before me and the people that are doing such good work at the moment. Because without them, I don't know how I would have got the jobs that I've got.
Yeah, I completely agree. But also, I do think it is changing now,
yes.
Like we're sort of at a precipice now where I do think, like, I think especially in theatre, especially subsidised theatre, it has to change. Like the way that you have to, because it's government money, like it has to have a public good in some capacity. And then, but film and TV, I think, comes after theatre a lot of the time. There's more money in it. And I think that means more risk for these executives or business people.
Yeah, people don't want to take that risk. They don't, I guess, because they think of us as some kind of, oh, it's the risk assessment. What are we going to do? Which is ridiculous, obviously. But
how are you going to find your mark? How are you going to read your script?
Yeah, I got a self-tape through. And my agency sort of said, obviously, we're getting a Word format for you very, very soon. They've just sent this through initially, but we're asking for a Word format for you. And I was like, that's brilliant, because I don't have to advocate and ask for this because it's already been done for me. But yeah, I think the work needs to be done from all sides, really. Like, I'm happy to shoulder some of that responsibility, but we can't do everything.
There's like the other side of the spectrum where you get like a tape or something in. The casting director or whatever company has tried to be really inclusive. It's like, don't worry, because of access needs, you don't need to memorize the lines. And I'm like, well, what good is that going to do me? Because I can't see the script.
Yeah. Like, or like when they say that you can be on book and it's like, well, no, I can't, because I can't read the script. What, like, it just doesn't work. Access needs are so variable for everyone, and I think the biggest thing that directors and casting directors can do is just ask. Like, just ask us and we'll tell you.
What are some of the changes you really, really want there to be? And I'll come to you first, Alan.
Everything has to change, to be honest. I mean, when I mentioned about the drama schools, the agencies, they have to change to understand the actors coming in, to understand what they need and understand their potential and train them to the best of their abilities as well. Equally, you need the casting directors, you need the people who are writing the scripts, you need the people who are creating the programmes or the movies or the theatre shows to actually accept that for authenticity, we're casting a blind role, so we want a blind person. Let's be as authentic as we possibly can. The viewers have to demand a bit more authenticity as well. I think there's a lot of strands that have to come together before there's a marked difference.
What are your thoughts, Sam?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, like, I work in drama schools now, and I think what's good is there's starting to be a big cultural shift, and kind of the people coming in now, if they're practitioners, if they've been learning to be teachers, they are open to working with students who may or may not be disabled. I would say drama schools are changing slowly but surely, which is great. I think in terms of TV and media representation, love to see just any blind character, they're just not a nice person, but not in the sense of like feel sorry for themselves.
A terrible human being.
A complex human being, shall we say. And they're using that to get what they want, rather than sort of existing in shallowness and feeling bad for themselves. It's an active kind of terribleness as opposed to like an inward terribleness.
Sam's looking for a blind baddie in a soap opera then.
Yeah, I mean, I'd echo that. I also, and this is literally just self-interest motivated, but I want more blind queer girls with swords to be in fantasy, because I want to have a sword and be in fantasy. But anyway, no, in all seriousness, I would agree with everything you guys have said. And I also think, like, uplift other disabled voices. And this is something I want to do much more often. I want to be able to say that I know more disabled actors and that I know more VI actors. But I also think that directors and casting directors need to put a concerted effort into getting to know those actors, because we are important and we are valid and we are talented. I don't want our achievements to be diminished because we're disabled. I don't think that that's fair. And so I think directors, casting directors, producers, everyone should make an effort to find out what disabled actors exist and who they are and why they're talented. Because it's all well and good to say, I want to audition loads of disabled actors. But if you don't engage with us and you don't talk to us and you don't find out who we are, you're not really going to consider us as seriously as you might do with a sighted actor or a non-disabled actor.
Well, thank you so much, Ellie Walwork, Samuel Brewer and Alan Russell for joining us for this roundtable talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
RNIB Connect Radio, celebrating 20 years of broadcasting around the UK.